Investment advisory services offered through Independent Solutions Wealth Management and Blackridge Asset Management LLC. Peak Broker Services LLC is not an affiliate of Independent Solutions or Financial Guys LLC.
Podcast, baby!
You're listening to the Financial Guys.
This is the sickness that is liberalism.
All these liberals love Bill Clinton. Let's put the budget back to where Billy was. Yeah.
People like Andrew Cuomo, people like Barack Obama, people like that have no business experience or skill whatsoever.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to the Financial Guys podcast, a place where money meets politics. I'm your host, Glenn Wiggle, here with Mike Lomas. And, of course, we are the Financial Guys. We're going to talk about the markets a little bit today, actually, because of the volatility in the markets. We're going to talk Super Tuesday. Looks like Sleepy Joe might eke one out here. We're, of course, recording this Tuesday morning, so by the time this you're maybe listening to this, it may have already been done.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there, Glenn. Yeah. It might be till Wednesday. They may have to find a box or a car or a few full of ballots somewhere.
So. True. Yeah, yeah. We'll talk
might
about that.
Might not be over on Tuesday.
No, probably not. I mean, based on the way they've been running things thus far, I would highly doubt it. The odds in Vegas, by the way, have Biden now, as of Tuesday, plus six.
Right.
For the plus 5.6 for the Super Tuesday here, and getting the Democrat nod. So it looks like Biden's probably going to be it, right? Because Bloomberg's not getting any traction.
Yep.
Nobody likes Bloomberg. No matter how much money you spend, Mini Mike, nobody likes you, right?
A record amount. I mean, unbelievable the amount of money he has spent to be where he is.
I think it's going to be close to like $1 billion at this point. It was something like
crazy?
$600 or $700 million leading up to the last debate. And, of course, Trump nailed it when he said, you know, what? He got nothing for it. He got nothing. How would you like that? I spent $700 million. That's okay, but I want to get something. He got nothing.
Right.
Spent $700 million, got nothing.
He didn't even get good publicity. He's not going to be able to sell T-shirts after this thing's over, right?
Nobody. Yeah. We said this from the get-go. Nobody likes Mini Mike Bloomberg. He's just not a likable guy. So you can run ads till you're blue in the face, but the fact of the matter is that you have the personality of a 2x4. I don't know what else to say.
And you know, he's too far to the right for that party.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just too many things that that don't fit with his message on winning the nomination. He's got to be more led. Whoever it is got to lean to the left and then shift to the middle once they get the nominee. And Joe's the only one that actually could do that. I mean, Sanders just went so far to the damn left, he's just a nut job. So.
Well, he's a Democrat socialist, not just a socialist, he says.
That's right.
But how about Elizabeth Warren, though? How does it have to feel to be behind in the Vegas odds against somebody who's not even running? Hillary Clinton has better odds of winning the primary.
Double. Almost triple
Elizabeth
the odds.
Warren.
Yeah.
Mini Mike, by the way, before Super Tuesday, before the last debate in Vegas, was lecturing the other candidates, Klobuchar and Mayor Pete, saying, you know, get out of the race and just throw your support behind me. Or just at this point, you're just noise, and we got to defeat a Bernie Sanders. And lo and behold, they listened to him, and he said, see, they behaved and they listened to me, except they threw their support behind Biden, not Bloomberg, which must be a slap in the face to Bloomberg, who basically has been financing the DNC while Biden's been fleecing the DNC and everybody else in the world. This is hilarious.
I figured, and I've been saying this for weeks, that the DNC will figure out a way to screw Sanders and give it to Biden.
It'll
end up with Biden.
It'll be Biden for sure.
You know, I just cannot wait. We have to figure out a way. We have to figure out a way to have massive parties for the Trump-Biden debates. We have to figure out a way to do that. You know, we'll raise some money for charity. Somehow we've got to make it into an event because it's going to be a blast.
Well, I've got a clip of him giving a speech somewhere, I guess. I don't know if it was South Carolina or whatever. He's trying to quote the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And he just you know what it is. He just figures, he goes, all men are endowed by the Creator, men and women alike. You know how it goes. Holy cannoli. You were there. I can't wait to see Trump just take
Your mom's
part.
Still alive. Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it was your father that died. Oh, wow. He's going to be so much fun for Trump to take. Sleepy Joe.
Right.
I don't think Sleepy Joe could keep up with Trump. I think Trump's going to run circles around him on the campaign trail, in the debates, in the ads, in the questions from reporters. I mean, the only chance that Joe has is to just collect ungodly amounts of money and just run as many ads as possible and try to avoid as many debates as possible. But I don't see how you could possibly do that.
I'm truly surprised that the people that are behind Joe don't, you know, bring him together with one unified stump speech type of message. I mean, you know, like, Joe, don't get off the topic. Don't talk about children on your lap or touching your legs or anything like that. Or here is the speech. You know, I'll tell you this. If you watched Trump last time around, he had that stump speech. I mean, he was going town to town.
Yep.
And for the most part, that speech was the same. You know, I went to two different rallies and I saw the same speech, right?
Right.
That was okay, though. I mean, it was on message. It was on point. He was in and out and it was effective. He knew what he was doing. And it's really a shame, I guess, for the Democrats. I mean, I don't care, but it's a shame for them that Joe just can't get it together. I mean, somebody grab him and say, look, here are the 5 to 7 talking points we're going to stick to, Joe. Here's the playbook. Roads and bridges, infrastructure, education, the unions, you know, higher wages, you know, tax the rich. I mean, stick to that game plan. Write them down.
Yeah, write them down. Use little notes if you have to. Write it inside the palm of your hand. Elizabeth Warren has that down. She's definitely got down the, you know, she's almost like Katharine Hepburn going for an Oscar when she starts to get some, you know, when she gets in front of the camera. She's obvious. She must be the, you know, this is all fixed, right? So, Elizabeth, you stay in. You're going to draw the radical boat away from Bernie. That's the plan there, right? So, Elizabeth Warren was, I'm sure, told to stay in this because she's going to siphon off some votes from Bernie, right? Mayor Pete, you're kind of moderate. Klobuchar, you're moderate. We need you getting behind Biden so we can get rid of Bloomberg because even the DNC, even though he's funded, they don't like him either. So, they're going to throw this against to Biden. What's going to happen is they're going to go into the Democrat National Convention, likely with split delegates, and the super delegates have already said they're going to give it to Biden. So if they're, unless the only way Bernie can possibly take it is if he goes in with a super majority that even if the super delegates throw their weight behind Biden, he still has more delegates than any other candidate. And I just don't think he's going to be able to amass that
many. No, I don't think so either.
He's already peaked. He's peaked way too early. And to be honest with you, when it comes to actual voting, and I think you're going to see that after Super Tuesday, these young army of Bernie bros are home smoking pot on the couch. They're not getting out the vote. Well, they don't even know what day the vote's supposed to be. So most of these guys, the rally comes up on Facebook, so they know they'll attend the rally because there's going to be some hacky sack and some drum circle there.
And
you
they
know?
Don't have to work. Exactly. Yeah, they're off for the day.
Right. Yeah. So that's just something. So it's just getting together with friends. It's like, don't go to a tailgate, right?
That's
it's like tailgating for kids. But you know, adults go to the Bills game every Sunday. These kids go to a Bernie rally and they have some fun and it's all good. But when it comes to actually doing work and voting, never going to happen. You sent me a picture, actually, or maybe it was Zimmer. Hilarious. Of everyone with their driveway and their sidewalk shoveled, except for the one that had the Bernie Sanders sign in the driveway.
That's great.
And that's just classic. Just absolutely
and
classic.
I'll tell you, it's a minority of people. And, you know, our flagship office in Buffalo, New York, you know, Buffalo went through that with the preservationists, right? There was a group of people.
Yep.
They wanted to preserve every single building. And even after the city marked, they said, okay, we'll work with you. You tell us what buildings you want to save. We'll go around the town with you. We'll mark them. We'll save them. And then after that, they wanted to save everything, right?
Yep.
But it was funny because you got this feeling that it was the entire city that was trying to preserve these buildings that were falling over, drug-infested, rat-infested houses. And when you actually showed up at a protest, and we did that one time to try to interview some of these people, you realize that the mainstream media was doing their best job to pack these people in and make it seem as if there was 100,000 people there, when really there was 20.
Yep.
And it was the same 20 that showed up at every single property and every single rally, and they did a good job of you know, getting support from the media because the media loved the story. It was a left-wing story. The same is true with Sanders. Look at his rallies. If you start to pan out the camera a little bit, you'll notice that there's, you know, 200 or 300 people there, 400 people.
Yep.
Meanwhile, you've got Trump with 18,000-20,000 people inside, 15,000 people outside, and another 40,000 people at home trying to watch it on video.
And that's in places like Jersey. Right. Mm-hmm. It's not even in places like Texas or Florida where he's got a huge following, you know.
That's right.
Even Biden, though, I mean, he showed up at a rally in Vegas and it was hilarious because he walked in. There was like, I don't know, 4 people there, not counting the reporters, because he zones right in on the kid.
Right.
So he goes right to the 8-year-old, you know, girl in the group. Like, honestly, Joe, no one's pulled you aside yet and just say, keep your hands off the kids.
Right.
I mean, seriously, no one's going to have that heart to heart with you.
Right.
Anyway. All right. Let's talk a little bit about the markets and then we'll come back to some of the other stuff that we have here. I've got some Greta Thunberg and stuff like that. But obviously, you know, we don't talk about this a lot on the podcast, but crazy volatile. Right. So a record point gain yesterday. all-time record, almost 1,300-point rally on the Dow, a 40% snapback from the from last week, which was really just a kind of a rout, right? So down plus 10-plus percent for the week, you know, obviously super, super volatile. All about the coronavirus, which, well, that's what the media claims
partly,
at least, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's more than that.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's
you know, I did an interview yesterday, and I said I think it's a three-legged stool. I think you've got the coronavirus. I think you've got Sanders, you know, gaining some steam, who's a Democrat socialist. And I think you just had earnings that were not up to par with prices, right? So you had the three of them sort of meet together. And what I've been, what I said in the interview yesterday, and I'm sticking to it, is the market is going to always do what it does, which is overbuy and oversell. And to me, nobody likes any kind of correction, right? If we could get into an investment vehicle that just went straight up and earned us, you know, 8 or 9 or 10% a year, that would be great. But the fact of the matter is they don't make that. There isn't something like that. And so you just got to make sure you stick with your plan, be diversified. But nobody likes a pullback. But when the pullbacks are quick and fast, they tend to bounce back faster. And I think it's really important that you know, it, to me, I don't know of a tool where you can get out at the top and in at the bottom, but you just got to make sure you're participating in the upside. And what we've been telling our clients is, you know, we didn't miss the downside of the market, but most of our clients missed a big chunk of the downside because we're diversified. We have other things besides stocks. And now we're rebalancing into lower stock prices. And that's the key. You know, we've got clients, you and I, Glenn, that have been with us for 20 years. And when you look at the wealth they've accumulated, oftentimes, the most amount of wealth were accumulated during times like this when they made the right decisions. They didn't panic. They bought down in the market, and they stuck to their guns and their principles of having a plan, and that's really the key.
Right. And our money managers, our investment platform, Independent Solutions Wealth Management, our investment advisory firm, already rebalanced back in January. So we had taken some gains off the table from the previous year, and we're sitting in pretty good position going into this latest correction that our analysts were kind of calling for, right? I mean, Dave Mariocker, John Thur, Paul Meek, they're all saying, you know, we expect a 5 to 10% correction just because prices have gotten a little bit too far over their skis, so to speak. And you know, we've got to remember the markets have always been a two steps forward, one step back kind of proposition, right?
Yeah.
So we, you know, the S&P goes up 20%. In 2019, we pull back maybe 10% in 2020. But I think, you know, our analysts, again, are saying for the year, they're still seeing a positive returns. And, you know, even you sent me this from, I think, CNBC. Stocks should return to all-time highs by summer as coronavirus fears subside, according to this CFRA strategist. And I think he's right. You know, as you get as this thing kind of burns out, the media has way overblown the coronavirus.
Mm-hmm.
So I talked to just a couple of clients, not very many. Most were you know, happy with what was going on and not overly concerned. But a couple of clients, and they said, oh, but what if this turns into a pandemic? And so what already is kind of a pandemic, right? It's
right.
already gone across, you know, a country lines. It's already in multiple countries. Isn't that the definition of a pandemic? It starts to cross to different countries and go around the world. But so is the flu. So is the common cold. So are a lot of things, right?
Yeah.
We had the same, another investment firm, I can't think of the name of them, but they put out a great piece a while back, actually. And it just said, the last 30 years, here's 30 reasons why not to invest. And it went through really the last 30 years, you know, 9/11 and the tech wreck and, you know, all the different things. Every single year, there's always been a reason to say, oh, we better get out of the market. Ebola, West Nile virus, that was going to kill us all. And then this was going to kill us all.
SARS was a big one because it hit Canada.
Yeah, right. So let me play this clip. This is Dr. Drew, and I think he really nails it. He here is just absolutely scolding the media, and I think he's absolutely right about what he's doing. He's you know, for sure. Let me see if I can get this on to, I guess airplane mode is what I want. Okay, so let me just play this clip here. This is Dr. Drew, and I'm not
Drew,
sure what show this is.
Are we overreacting as...
Yes. Mm.
Yes.
I'm hearing this from doctors left and right.
Yes, and we are not overreacting. The press is overreacting, and it makes me furious. The press should not be reporting medical stories as though they know how to report it. We will, if we have a pandemic, I won't know how to tell that we're actually having a pandemic because everything is an emergency. People that are infectious disease specialists, the CDC, the epidemiologists, need to take this very seriously. The press needs to shut up because you're more likely to die of influenza
that's
right now.
That's what doctors are saying.
However, and I'm not trying to go against you, but I have a question. It is now beat SARS in terms of fatalities, 362, and they're saying
but its fatality rate is still lower.
But they're saying it spreads fast.
It's a mild illness. It spreads all over the place, and it's only out of these 17,000 documented infected. I bet there's hundreds of thousands of cases, 300 deaths.
Okay.
And always in immunocompromised people, always in people that are at risk for these sorts of things if they get a severe viral respiratory infection, whether it's flu or corona or whatever. All of these can hurt people who are compromised. They can. The rest of us need to wash our hands carefully, get our influenza vaccines, listen to the CDC. If there's a problem, they will let us know.
The CDC made it very clear that 5,000 people just in the last 2 weeks have died from the flu.
Thank
here
you.
In America
and
alone.
Why are we panicked about that? Three
no
people
one is.
Died on the streets of Los Angeles this morning from homelessness. Why,
wow.
If that were coronavirus, people would freak the hell out.
You're right.
Why aren't we putting our parties in the right place? It's the press. The press does not know how to report on medical issues. It's where I first learned
Should
about
fake news.
Should
we have consultants? How could we fix this?
When Anthony Fauci, who's one of their leaders in infectious disease, gets on national news broadcast.
Anyway, so Dr. Drew fired up, right?
Well,
I mean,
by the
he's
way,
right.
He nails
it's absolutely
it with the
right.
Media, right. But let me say this. As Trump has done so successfully, he will use and abuse and beat the media once more, right? And the way he's going to beat the media is we're going to have a severe correction, severe meaning quick and fast, I think, in the beginning of 2020. And we will rally later on into the latter half of the year as Trump gains momentum and speed, and it looks like he's going to step on Sleepy Joe, right? Mm-hmm. So what will that mean? Well, that will mean Trump will walk back into the office. So to me, if politically I'm thinking we need to set our country up to be more conservative, less regulations, lower taxes over the next 4 years, that means Trump, not Biden. And that means a correction in the beginning of 2020 and then a better second half. Gives Trump higher probabilities of getting back into office means, again, Trump is winning. The other thing I said, Glenn, which is really, really important from an investment standpoint, is we have to understand that the market is going to, first of all, price in the worst-case scenario. So that's what it's doing with the coronavirus. And then it's going to pre-anticipate things. And, you know, what a lot of investors are going to do is they're going to say, well, I'm going to wait until this coronavirus is gone before I get back into the market.
Right.
And that's going to be a real mistake because the market is going to pre-anticipate. It's going to figure out beforehand, hey, look at this thing is not ending the world, as Dr. Drew just said. And we can go back and it's not going to hurt Walmart's earnings 5 years from now. Procter & Gamble is not going to get hit by this. And you're going to see money roll back into the market. Was it yesterday? Was that the bottom? I don't know. Well, you know, could have been a dead cat bounce. We'll see. But at some point, we'll run out of sellers. And when we run out of sellers, those buyers will start to say, I don't want to miss the next upswing. The market will pre-anticipate, so got to be careful about that. Don't try to time the market. Subtle adjustments along the way.
Yeah, and I think Jeffrey Gundlach, you know, he's the new bond king now. They call him of the 21st century. He's the manager of the Total Line Total Return Fund, or the Double Line Total Return Fund. You know, he was talking about this not being so much coronavirus, as you mentioned, Mike, as one of your three legs of the stool, but really being more about the political risk, right? So, and I think he's right, because when you look at the reaction of the markets, right, on Sunday, we had bad news when it came to coronavirus. We had a number of deaths and a couple of cases even in Florida, a couple more deaths in the United States that bring, I think, the total up to 8. And so Monday, if it was just on the coronavirus, really should have been a further down day. But what happened on Sunday that changed the momentum on Monday? Well, Biden won South Carolina in the primary, right? Mm-hmm. And not only won, but he won big. And then suddenly, you know, you got a resurgence of, well, wait a minute, maybe it won't be the socialist candidate. Because really, as of last week, it looked as if Bernie was going to run away with this thing.
Right.
And I think the market freaked out like, holy cow, because a lot of people started talking about, wait a minute, maybe America is dumb enough to elect a socialist. Maybe people are that stupid. And
maybe they didn't
I think that
see
freaked
the video
the markets
on
out.
What happened in Venezuela.
I think that freaked the markets out a bit. Speaking of Venezuela, by the way, I was getting into a Twitter battle with somebody over the weekend because that's what I do on weekends when I'm bored. And they, you know, of course, it's the typical answer from these morons on the left, right? Well, it's because oil collapsed, as if things were all peaches and roses in 2004 and 5. You know, they forget that within two years of Chavez taking over the oil industry, they were already having shortages at the pumps, right? Mm-hmm. They were already having issues and problems, right? They forget that Chavez came in and was elected when he came in and then completely changed the Constitution to basically make his power limitless and to give him, you know, a power for forever and ever. And then, of course, he turned it over to Maduro and they've controlled things ever since. It wasn't oil. I mean, oil, certainly the collapse of oil prices certainly exasperated the collapse of Venezuela, no question. But it would have happened one way or the other. That no just doubt. Happened to make it quicker is all.
Yep.
But Venezuela was already, going downhill big time. And already, because of the socialist programs, was having serious problems affording those things, just like our country does,
right.
And was already well on its decline. So, but that's your typical answer from these leftists. It's like, everything was going swimmingly until until the oil, which is not true at all. It's not true.
Yeah, no.
Sorry.
And
to
then
cut
the
you
price
off.
Of their debt went up, right? You just can't afford it anymore. So what happens is investors say, "Wait a minute, I was giving you this cash at 4%. I want 8. I want 10. I want 25. I want 30." And they just never dig themselves out of it.
Yep.
Glenn, I don't know if you caught this one. Children are having nightmares about climate change, study finds. And it's funny because you actually were talking on one of the radio shows or a podcast about 8 months ago, 12 months ago. They said, better be careful because these kids are going to grow up with massive amounts of anxiety because they think the world is ending because that's what we're teaching them. Yep. Sure enough, a few months later, here's the article that proves that children are having nightmares about climate change. And it's sad. It really is sad. You know, these kids aren't supposed to be worried about Earth up a half a going from 80 degrees to 81 or 80 to 80 and a half or whatever the statistics show them right now, with zero proof of actually having any human involvement that actually does it. Really sort of sad that these kids got to grow up in this day and age.
It really is. And you know, this is all the Greta Thunberg, you know.
You have stolen my dreams.
You know, she is the spokesperson now for, kids and the new climate change movement. And could you imagine telling your kids the world's ending, the world's ending, the world's ending, the world's ending? Well, of course these kids have anxiety. And
right.
These, shame on these adults who don't have a clue when it comes to actual climate change, right? I mean, this is such a joke. Again, all I'd have to ask these people when it comes to debating some of these clowns is just explain to me why Al Gore has a place on the coast. Explain to me why the Obamas, who were so worried about the sea levels rising, bought a place on Martha's Vineyard.
I mean, why,
even more importantly, why did the banks, if these banks who are always virtue signaling, Wells Fargo's of the world that are,
the Bank of America.
The Bank of America, right?
The American flag on your shirt anymore.
They're all supporting green this and green that, and they're, virtue signaling this and virtually signaling that. And then they underwrite the mortgages, right?
That's right.
There's no bank in the world. If Bank of America or Wells Fargo, one of these banks, honestly thought that the coastlines were going to be underwater and that global warming was a serious, immediate threat, as they claim, nobody in their right mind would loan money to anybody to build anything on any coast in any country in this world.
They 100% financed the boom in Miami, Glenn, with high-rise,
right.
Hundreds of billions of dollars.
It's ridiculous.
So they're out of one side of their mouth, they're saying, oh my gosh, the water levels are going to rise. We're going to be underwater. We got to save everybody. Oh, you want to build a $200 million complex right on the beach in Miami?
Oh, no problem.
Not a problem.
There you go.
Here's $150 million. Yep. Go for it.
It's ridiculous.
We think you'll rent it.
Yeah, right? Here's her speech. This is the latest from this article that she gave. Now, imagine, if you're listening to this speech, if I didn't know any better, I'd be like, oh, my God, what are we going to do? We're all going to die. I mean, listen, she's a great speech. I'll give her a lot of credit. I mean, I think she's being able to give a great speech. I mean, she's a great speaker. I mean, she really does, I think, a wonderful job. Unfortunately, I think that her parents have really twisted her brain into thinking that, we're all going to, have to jump off a cliff like lemmings.
Yeah. That's right.
Greta Thunberg!
They go crazy for her. She's like a cult hero. She's 17 now.
Emergency. People are already suffering and dying from the consequences of the climate and environmental emergency.
Where exactly is that happening?
Where is that? Yeah.
I just would like to ask her, in all sincerity, where
Can
exactly
I
is that? I mean, just serious. Yeah. Where are people burning to death? I mean, where
That's
are
right.
where has climate change caused, such dramatic changes that people are dying and starving, and it's not happening. Guess what? The Sahara Desert has been the desert thousands of years.
That's right.
And by
the way, Glenn, the only place that people are dying in the streets are places like California that are run by liberals and their liberal policies, and they can't afford housing anymore, and they can't afford food anymore, and all the companies have left, so they can't find a job.
Right.
That's where people are dying.
It's nothing to do with climate change.
Warming.
Right.
They're dying of filth in the streets.
That's right. Nothing to do with climate change.
Yeah. The conservative places are actually cleaning up their garbage. They're doing the right thing and disposing of it and getting rid of it. And those people aren't dying in the streets.
Right.
But it will get worse. And still,
I thought people were dying. How much worse could it get?
Completely ignored.
Completely
by the politicians, the media, and those in power. Well, I will not stand aside and watch. I will not be silent while the world is on fire. Will you? World leaders are behaving like children. So it falls on us.
I agree with that.
To be the adults in the room.
He's got a beautiful voice. He needs to be on Broadway.
She's really good.
It should not be this way. We should not be the ones who will have to lead on this and tell the uncomfortable truth. Once again, they sweep their mess under the rug for us young people, for their children, to clean up for them.
I mean, it's, you know, she goes on, obviously, and it's a
great speech,
right?
Yep.
Sadly, however, 19% of the kids surveyed in this survey, is from this article here, this is the Independent UK, when asked about their futures, almost 3 in 5, 58% of the children said that they're concerned about the impact of climate change would have on their lives, admitting that they are worried often about the, So 1 in 5, almost 20%, 19% of the children surveyed admitted to having a bad dream about the climate crisis, while 17% that they have had their sleeping and eating habits affected by their concerns. That's a massive amount. 20% is a massive amount.
With their peer group and, you know, playing sports and grades and all this other stuff. You know what's really funny, though, Glenn? What I really find funny is the world, the country, is supposed to be worried about global warming, yet I sent you another article about Americans continuing to vote with their feet towards low-tax states. A lot of those low-tax states happen to be closer to the equator.
Yes, right, exactly.
Like Florida, like Texas, right?
Right.
So we don't seem to be too worried about you know, the water levels rising on the coast of Florida as they're stomping their way out of the states like New York and running as fast as they can down to states like Florida.
It's simple.
There's Cuomo. It's simple. It's simple, all right. People are leaving.
By the way, we didn't really talk about this, and we should have spent a little time on it. Panasonic now pulling out.
So let's talk.
The Tesla building downtown. That's great. Or whatever, whoever owns it. But, so the whole pitch was that Tesla was going to make product there, and then they said, don't worry about it. We're going to send it to Panasonic, and now Panasonic has moved all their equipment out.
Yes.
And there's a lot of rumors that most of the major equipment has actually been already moved out of the facility. So. Sad. I mean, anybody with a brain in their head knew that was going to happen. At some point, that will be totally vacant. We'll be doing some other kind of a $500 million project to, you know, turn it into the convention center or something like that. And just really sad. It's sad that the state, and I don't know if that, I really don't think there's any hope for it. We've been doing 20 years of this show with trying to be at somewhat, I guess, a little bit optimistic of, hey, at some point we're going to get this. At some point, the teachers don't like Common Core. They're going to vote Cuomo out.
Right.
Second Amendment people, they don't like Cuomo. They don't like the fact that he's talking about, you know, taking away some of their rights. They're going to vote him out, right? The business leaders are going to vote him out. The list goes on and on. It's not changing at all. It's just not.
Nope.
And I don't know. The state got to go bankrupt. I don't know where it ends. But you look at California, and we're still far away from California. I mean, we got room to catch up. Andrew's doing his best. Every time, you know, California does something stupid, he says, oh, good idea. Let's piggyback on that. That looks great. And so, you know, get ready for higher taxes. Get ready. His bullshit about, well, we've got the lowest taxes now since I've been in office.
Yeah.
And everybody with a brain in their head knows that that's all crap. We all know that we're paying higher taxes this year than last year. We all know that they reassess our property values and they increase. Nobody's gotten any kind of a discount on anything. It's a total joke. It's going to continue. And I think it gets worse. I'll tell you, I look at our clientele, Glenn, and about half of our clients are telling me within the next 10 years they are leaving. Half. That's scary. These are people with money, resources. They go out and spend money. They, you know, they're the ones out in the restaurants and out at the mall. And it's gonna get a lot worse before it gets better in this state.
Well, don't worry though, Mike. The New York State, they are importing refugees as fast as they can. So that's what's gonna take up the slack for our college-educated young adults that are leaving. We'll just replace them with grade school educated, non-English speaking, maybe the best people in the world, but unfortunately not exactly what you would call skilled labor when it comes to a lot of these folks.
And by the way, you're putting them into the same school system with the English speaking kids, and now the teachers have to, and this is true, I know you can debate me if you want, but go down to the city of Buffalo and ask to spend the day in some of these kindergartens, first grade, second grade schools. You'll find out that there might be 20 kids in the class, and there's 10 different languages. Yep. I don't know how you teach to that. You just don't.
Nope, exactly. And
it takes away from the 10 that are there that are in that system of, and we know the results of that system, 40% graduation rates, if we're lucky, counting the people that say they're going to get a GD, they're going to go at least come back at some point and graduate. Most of them don't. They just say, I'll be back. I'm going to either enroll or I'm going to get the GED or I'm going to do something. Most of them never show back up. But we count them in the 40%.
Yes.
We're plugging those 10 kids that do know English into that system, and the teachers have to deal with that. They can't educate the kids the right way. It's sad.
No, they have no chance whatsoever. So this this article goes on. State population changes, they're looking at the census coming out very soon. So they're saying if 2019 is any indication. Texas, of course, gained 367, the biggest winner. Florida, a net positive 233,000 new residents. So the two were ahead. Of course, you can take a wild guess at which two led the country in losses. Of course, New York had a net loss of 76,790 residents, and Illinois was not too far behind with a loss of 51,250. That's just for the year 2019. So when the census comes out, New York State, unless they can license immigrants and get refugees in and somehow get them to be counted, remember, that's the whole thing that they push for make sure you're counted. Make sure you're counted in the census, because they don't want to lose those congressional seats, and that's what will happen. And and more seats will leave New York and places like Illinois and go to Texas and Florida.
Let's just cross
Tennessee,
our fingers that they don't go down there. We have an office down there. You and I both spend a lot of time back and forth, Florida, New York, Florida, New York. I pray every day that they don't ruin that state.
They do. They're trying. They don't get it, man. It's amazing to me. So let me get this straight. You moved to Florida. Why? Well, the taxes were too high where I came from. And who was in charge where you came from? Right. Was it Republicans or Democrats? Well, it was Democrats. But that's not the reason why. So I'm going to come to Florida because
those are different Democrats.
Those are different Democrats. Right. So, I'm out there voting, canvassing the neighborhood for, Elizabeth Warren or people like that. And I say, why? Why? What are you doing? Why would you do that? You left a place like New York. You left Massachusetts. Right. You left a high tax state. Well, she's going to tax the rich. She's not going to tax me.
No.
How many times are you morons going to fall for this? Seriously, you got Bernie Sanders out there talking about taxing people starting at $29,000 and up, right? And then going, but you won't have to pay for anything. So if we take all your money, then everything is free. Then you won't have to pay for anything. He's going to spell it out for you across the board. I don't, these people think that somehow it's somebody else.
They asked him if he knew what all his proposals cost. He said, I don't know all the nickels and the dimes.
Oh, the nickels.
we'll $60 trillion.
But yeah, it's impossible. Right? It's more wealth than the country even has. Remember, it was Keith Ellison up in Minnesota, who's now high up in the DNC, that said, there's plenty of money in this country. It's just not in the government's hands yet. That's all. No. So that's exactly how they think.
I don't know if we want to end on this, but Chris Matthews resigns on air, by the way.
Yeah.
First segment walks off. So.
Yeah, we got to play.
It's funny because these Democrats for the last bunch of years have tried their hardest to make Trump out as a racist. He hates women, very disrespectful to women. And of course, Trump, like he's been doing, winning again, because we see that Chris Matthews is actually the one that's been very disrespectful to women. And it looks like Chris just had enough. And I'm not sure who's going to be left at MSNBC. My guess is, though, if nobody's left and it's just dead air, the ratings will go up.
Probably. Probably. Especially at CNN. But but let me just play I guess the thrill's gone from his leg. But here's just this is actually Tucker Carlson.
Remember that touchy-feely thrill when Obama won?
Yeah, exactly. This is actually Tucker Carlson talking about it, but it's better than the actual MSNBC. I couldn't stomach that, so let me play this. We got to go here. Come on. This will take just a second. And, of course, there's an ad. Well, all these stupid ads. I got to tell you, these YouTube things where they try to slip in the ads and whatnot are just making me watch it less and less and less.
We need to come up with our own channel.
Right.
Well, Chris Matthews of MSNBC, of course, a longtime fixture in cable news, 30 years, shocked viewers tonight and quit his job at the beginning of his show on the air Chief Breaking News correspondent Trace Gallagher has more on this. Hey, Trace.
Yeah, Tucker, right at the top of the show. In fact, after the first break, Matthews was gone. And here's what he said right out of the gate. Watch this.
Let me start with my headline tonight. I'm retiring. This is the last hardball on MSNBC. And obviously, this isn't for lack of interest in politics. As you can tell, I've loved every minute of my 20 years as host of Hardball.
Now, for the record, the writing has been on the wall for several days. Matthews was not part of the network's South Carolina coverage this weekend, and he's been under pressure to resign for a litany of controversial comments, like comparing Bernie Sanders' victory in Nevada to the Nazi defeat of the French in World War II, for which he later apologized. But accusations of sexist comments may have been the final straw. Listen to what else Matthews said.
Compliments on a woman's appearance that some men, including me, might have once incorrectly thought were okay, were never okay. Not then, and certainly not today. And for making such comments in the past, I'm sorry.
And just for context, Matthews was accused of asking inappropriate questions during a recent interview with Elizabeth Warren. And then freelance journalist Laura Bassett said he made inappropriate comments to her on a few occasions. With all that, 20 years of hosting Hardball now over.
That's one way to frame it, though. He framed it as a compliment.
Yeah, right? So, Me Too movement, I guess, takes down another Democrat. Would you say it that way? I mean, they invented this whole movement, right? It was going to be the one that was going to take down Trump because he was, remember that Access Hollywood tape where he said, you know, you could grab women by the, in Hollywood. Now, he didn't say he did. He said you could, and he was right. What he was talking about was what goes on in Hollywood with people like Harvey Weinstein and everybody else. And as usual, Trump was spot on again, just like when he said, they spied on me and they tapped a Trump Tower, and everybody laughed at him. And then, you know, on and on. Each and every time, Trump has been 100% right. So he's going to walk back in office because of it. You know, it's amazing. For the first time, a president actually getting, you know, constantly berated for keeping his promises. I mean, it really is amazing.
Wow,
but,
they're scared of him, right?
I mean, even some of the Democrat causes, right? You know, prison reform. They're like, we're going to run on prison. He's already checked the box. Like, you can't run on that anymore, right? What else are you going to run on? You know, he's already taken away all those different things. So, you know.
Well, he's doing what he said he was going to do. I was talking to somebody the other day, and you know what I have just a tremendous amount of respect for him is he has never, ever once backed down, not for political anything, you know, and whether it's his Twitter account or whether it's going after people, you know, there's a lot to be said about somebody who's not selling his soul, right? He doesn't do that. And it would be easy to do. It'd be easy to say, hey, look, you know, my favorability ratings are good right now. The economy's good. The markets are good. I'm just going to back off a little bit for political reasons. He's not doing that. He's saying, look, I came here to change stuff. I came here to drain the swamp. And every single day he's showing up to do that. And just a ton of respect for that man. So I'm really, really looking forward to whether it's Joe or I think it'll be Biden. I've said for a long time I think it'll be Biden. I'm sticking to that. I think it will be him.
For sure.
I cannot wait for the debates. I cannot wait. I just hope Joe shows up. I just know hope he's in the right state.
Yeah, I think he's going to. Yeah, right.
I mean, they could say, hey, Joe, it's in Nevada. And Joe'll be like, Iowa, hey. Like, they're like, Joe, you're in the wrong auditorium.
Joe. Oh, man. No, he's definitely going to be the candidate. Bernie's not going to be. They're doing everything they can to sandbag Bernie again.
Oh, yeah.
As the next debate, they'll give Biden all the answers, and Bernie will be totally screwed.
And as you said, I think Warren will be there to blast him. So
yeah, that's her role now.
She's going to tee it up on him, and she is good at that. That's one that she comes across as very fake. That's why she's not doing well in the debates right now.
Yep.
But she's going to hurt other people, and that's what she's there for, right? She was there to hurt Bloomberg. She did it. She's an attorney. She's good at it.
Yep.
But she's very unlikable. Everybody knows she's fake, and they just can't stomach it anymore, right? That's why Clinton didn't win last time. They knew she was fake.
That's right. But
it's
she is.
We've had enough fakeness.
That's right. Elizabeth Warren, though, she is the DNC's baseball bat, or maybe tomahawk. We'll see.
Yeah. And by the way, Joe is not fake. I mean, you know, he says a lot of dumb things, but he's not
Kelsey's
fake.
Yelling at me. You can't say that. Listen, she's the one who claimed to be an American Indian, and not me. I mean, she's the one. Anyway. Yeah, she's gonna scalp Bloomberg the next debate for sure, and Bernie as well. No, you can't say that either. Apparently,
can't wait
say
to
any
see
of these
it.
Things.
We'll be front row. It is entertaining. It's my favorite reality show
Really is. So they say Trump is a reality TV guy. Yes, he is, and it's gonna be a lot of fun to watch.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yep.
No doubt. All right, that's going to do it for us, folks. Look, and if you need us throughout the week, again, we talked a little bit about money. We do manage money for a living. On Thursday of this week, March 5th, 3 o'clock, is our next investment committee call. which is open to the public. We already have several hundred people signed up for that. Obviously, the markets play a big part in that. There will be replays available, but of course, nothing is like hearing it live. I'll be hosting and interviewing our investment committee, including Paul Meeks, Chartered Financial Analyst, John Thurr, as well, CFA, along with possibly Dave Mariocker, and certainly Danny Neiman, who is our Chief Investment Officer and Portfolio Manager for the Neiman Family of Funds. What else am I supposed to plug?
Oh, our Facebook page. Like us on Twitter. Facebook. Follow us on Twitter and our Facebook page. Our Facebook page, our website, thefinancialguys.com. But like our Facebook page as well. A lot of the stuff we post to our Facebook page. But our website, thefinancialguys.com.
Absolutely. All right. If you need us throughout the week again, use us as a resource. Go to our website or give us a call at the office. 833-FIN-GUYS, 833-FIN-GUYS. Don't forget our YouTube channel as well. Again, all that information is available on our website at thefinancialguys.com. All right. On behalf of Mike Lomas, I'm Glenn Wiggle. Thanks again for tuning in. We appreciate it. If you like what you heard, give us a like, give us a thumbs up, or whatever you do on a podcast, and share it with your friends. We'll see you next week here on the Financial Guys podcast.